Welcome to the Professional Magician Podcast. Discover ways to book more shows at higher fees from a guy who's been doing it for over 20 years. Here's Chris Johnson.
A discussion of not falling for the best in magic, plus a review of several linking fingering topics and solutions to the trick. It's all coming up in today's episode of the Professional Magician Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Johnson. Oh, I'm going to apologize in advance if I'm off my game a little bit. Our new dog, Daphne, got sick, and she ate something she shouldn't have, so she was up all night. So we're up all night with her, and then I had to get up and go do a show. And so anyway, that's why this episode of the podcast, it might be a little bit more disjointed than usual. Plus, I might ramble a little bit, so my apologies. So I came up with this topic, not on the spur of the moment today, but I've had it in my mind for a few weeks now. And it stemmed from my borderline obsession about finding the best version of the linking finger ring effect. It's an effect that I've long loved. I first saw the linking finger rings performer Richard Osterlin on his, it wasn't Mental Miracles. It was whatever his first L&L video was, the one that sold a billion copies and is essentially like most of his act. And as I recall, he closed that with the linking finger rings. I'd never seen anything like it before. The idea of you know, linking borrowed finger rings struck me as so much more powerful than the regular linking rings that most of us are familiar with. Now, don't get me wrong. I love watching a good linking ring routine. Jeff McBride's routine set to music, I still think is one of the best things I've ever seen in magic. But from an audience standpoint, I can't fathom anything being more powerful than borrowing some finger rings and linking them together. So I began exploring the topic and have purchased several different versions and explored several different methods over the years. And I keep coming back to one, which is, for me, the best solution. But the best solution is going to be something that is going to be different for every person listening to this. So, and the reason why I bring this up, because as I began thinking further about this idea of the best, is that you see things in magic ads where it says the best solution to XYZ plot ever. And sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not right. I think a lot of it comes down to personal preference. I think most of the time, trying to find the best version of something is a fool's errand, because what fits you may not be the best for me. There's a lot of different things, a lot of different effects that I've noticed over the years, like the smash and stab. You know, the plot where you've got four or five plastic cups or styrofoam cups turned upside down on a table underneath one as a spike. And then you go through and you smash, the spectator mixes them up and you smash all of them but one. And of course, the one that is not smashed is a spike. And it felt like for a while there, a year or two before the pandemic, if memory serves, maybe I'm off, where it seemed like a new version of this trick was coming out every day. And everyone proclaimed, this is the best version, it's the safest version. And I bought, and I still use the one that I bought the first time. It was it's no longer available. It's Wayne Dobson's solution to it, and it's called Smash and Stab. I purchased John Allen's The Pain Game. I did that a little bit. That's got a lot of advantages and a couple of disadvantages I didn't like, so I wound up selling it. I bought Scott Alexander's version. I can't remember what it was called right now, but that one wasn't bad either. But it just for me, and again, this is why it's such a subjective thing, the best version for you may not be the best version for me. So I keep going back to the original Smash and Stab. I know Bobby Mata hurt his hand, actually hit the wrong bag or cup one time, and we were having dinner one night, and he showed me the scar in his hand. So the one he was using had a flaw in it, and he messed up and he hurt his hand really bad. But anyway, so there's all these different versions of these tricks that come out, and before that, before the craze of the smash and stab craze, there was the flash cash craze, and I don't know if this is the first version of this trick ever, but it was one that I first became familiar with. It was his name just fell out of my head too. Everyone's screaming at me right now is what it is. I'm so tired. I had his name in my head right before I started recording this episode. Now it fell out, but it was basically you show several pieces of a magazine and you fold them and flip them. And then they change instantly to cash. Fred Capps. There it is. I believe it's Fred Capps. The name just popped back in my head. Thank God. And then after that, there was the Hyundai 500 by Gregory Wilson. There was, Extreme Burn, and a whole bunch of these things that just kept coming out year after year, time after time. And it was a plot that has several different versions of it. And I stuck with Hyundai 500 because I liked it, because other than a certain something you had to buy at the drugstore or Walmart, the only thing you needed for the trick are your bills. So I actually was on vacation with my wife. We were at the Poconos, and I'm not one of those guys that I don't do everyday carry. I have nothing against people who do it. It's just not for me. I don't like performing unless I'm actually doing a show. Mostly because I'm very shy in social situations. I'm very shy. But at the Poconos, what they wound up doing is putting couples together, four or five couples to a table for dining, and it was to encourage socialization and that kind of thing. And whenever people go around the table, like, what do you do? What do you do? My wife's a hairdresser, and this guy drives truck, and everybody has their own thing. And then it got to me, and I'm a magician, and of course they want to see something, because I'd bend some forks. And then this one couple we became friends with, very tight with, they wanted to see something else, and I didn't have any other gear with me. So we went to Walmart, and I picked up that item, got some bills, and I put together a Hyundai 500 on the fly and showed them the next day. So I liked that one. I performed Hyundai 500 for years for that solution. It was my opener for many of my close-up shows when I was doing strolling, things like that. And I saw all the versions coming out. I'm like, I'm sticking with Hyundai 500. To me, it works the best, and it's just great. I didn't see any other reason to go any further. And then I did wind up switching. I went with Extreme Burn because some of the gimmicks involved with that and some of the handlings allowed you to do it stand-up. Because I'd only learned on Hyundai 500, holding it down in your hand. People look down and they see the trick. And I had a I was trying to adapt it to stand-up because I had some really cool scripts I was doing. So I wound up switching to Extreme Burn so I could do it stand-up, and now I also do a close-up. And that's one of the few times that I found a better version of a trick, and I made the switch. The other time I refused to do it was I was learning the $100 bill switch, and I saw Harry Anderson doing it on TV, and I'd heard about the $100 bill switch. A few people told me about it. So after watching Harry's video over and over again and talking to some people, I kind of cobbled together my own handling, and it wasn't bad. And then I walked into the magic shop, because at this point I was living in Pittsburgh, and I walked into the magic shop and I showed the guy, the owner that I was friends with, my handling. He goes, "Here, get this." And he gave me Money Morph. I almost forgot the name. It's called Money Morph. And that was back in the late 90s. It was his version of the $100 bill switch. And to me, I think it's still the best. And there's been like a billion other versions that come out since then. But I still use Money Morph, even though it's, almost 25 years old. So I really think that chasing the best version of any trick is a fool's errand, because every time you switch, even if you're doing the same trick, it's not exactly the same trick. There's always going to be these differences. So anytime you change a trick, now you've got to work, hard to get the handling into your muscle memory, and that's going to take a long time. I've done the $100 bill switch, the Money Morph handling of it, thousands and thousands of times, not only for close-up, but also for stage, too. So, I couldn't even calculate how many times I've done that trick. And it's just something I can just do in my sleep, the physical handling of it, I should say. So I really think that every time you change your handling or a routine for a given plot and magic, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball, because now you've got to work harder to get it back into your muscle memory. And there's always going to be that nice light bit of hesitancy until it becomes just smooth as silk. And that's what you're really looking for. You want smooth as silk. So the other thing that may inhibit trying to chase down the best version of a trick is whether a trick is applicable to on stage. And then even then it may come down to what version of the trick is best for your stage situation. And the reason why I think that is because, for years I'd heard about Scott Alexander's handling of the Linking Finger Ring project called The Missing Link. And let me list the four handlings that I'm familiar with. And there's obviously a billion handlings out there, but the four that I gravitated towards was, I first learned about it through Richard Osterlin's video, and that was solid. It was rock solid, and I just wanted something a little bit different. There's something about it that just didn't play, that didn't sit well with me, just from a personal standpoint. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, we've all done that. We've all bought a trick and we learned something. We're like, oh, I really don't like that. Like I've said this before. before on the podcast, I'm really comfortable with double writing for mentalism, but a lot of people are scared to death of it. But on the same token, I also can't stand rough and smooth. So for the most part, I almost always avoid rough and smooth tricks. So anyway, I checked out Osterlin's handling of the linking finger rings, and just, you know, it wasn't for me. I'm like, well, I'm going to explore this further. And then I think the next one I picked up was David Riegel's The Linking Fingering Project. And I liked that one a lot. I wasn't really enamored with his presentation, you know, his scripting. I mean, it was fine for him. It just didn't fit me, you know, duh. And I eventually picked up Nick Lewin's handling. And his doesn't actually come with a gimmicked ring, but I'll tell you about that more when I get into the specificities of these three handlings, I should say. Like that a lot, and there was just things about it that I didn't like, and never picked up, never got Scott Alexander's until fairly recently, and I had the opportunity to see the video for it, and so it really depends on what your version of best is. I mean, you know, Scott's version has been marketed as the best version, bare none, but I can see where it would be problematic depending on where you're presenting this, because Scott Alexander did, to my recollection, did a ton of cruise ships. So he's in front of 1,000-2,000 people at a time. And if you're doing cruise ships, his is absolutely the best version for it in terms of handling and whatnot. But if you're not doing cruise ships, I think the question is a little bit more nuanced. So let me now get into all three of these and kind of offer my thoughts about what version may be best for you, and discuss some of the things to consider before you decide what is the best for you. So I'm going to transition now over to this week's trick talk. And again, I know this is a different format that I'm usually doing, so I'm going to be talking about several different tricks, but I really do want to have that clear separation before I get into this part of the podcast. So let's go now into this week's episode of Trick Talk.
It's time for Trick Talk. Honest, detailed reviews of magic tricks, equipment, and other fun stuff to make your show the best it can be.
Okay, so continuing this overall discussion about not getting sucked into the best and switching routines, I'm going to first talk about the missing link, based on what I know about it. Like I said, I've seen the video, and I've seen the explanations and everything, and there's a lot about it that I really like a lot. So here's the ad copy on Bob Kohler Magic. The missing link. Bob Kohler and Scott Alexander have been working together developing the ultimate stage version of the classic linking finger rings for decades. This quest has finally reached our stringent goals. Linking finger ring routines in the past have suffered from many weaknesses. Virtually all previous routines to take place in the audience, not on the stage. The inferior handling and choreographies usually reduce one of the most powerful effects to puzzle status. A new benchmark is now available, the missing link. Scott and Bob have solved each and every weakness, and in the end result is the most powerful visual and hilarious version ever witnessed by audiences. The most damaging weakness in linker fingering routines is performers have taken what should be a stage routine and performed it in the audience off the stage. This flaw makes the routine play small. The majority of the audience cannot see most of the routine. The missing link finally solved this issue. All the visual links, unlinks, and proofs happen on stage in front of the owners of the rings. The payoff is incredible. Everyone in the audience can see each and every part of the routine. They witness the owner's reactions to the links and unlinks. They hear the owner's admission that their ring is linked, proving the impossible has happened. The owner's faces tell the story. The audience can follow the plot chapter by chapter as it unfolds, delivering a reaction that is simply a showstopper. Let me see here. Scott has developed a brand new cutting-edge method of visually linking the rings. Gasps are the norm. Even in showrooms of 1,000, the audiences can see just how amazing the linking of the finger rings is. Scott's solution is brilliant and easily the best solution, period. Here's a sequence. It's fast and stunning. It takes about 4 seconds to perform. The audience sees a single ring and a pencil. It is visually linked to the second ring, so two rings are linked. Immediately, the chain of two is linked to the third ring, producing a chain of three. You won't believe your eyes. It's very easy to do because of two things. Scott's brilliant concept and the design of the missing link ring. Incredibly easy to do. Scott and I spent over 18 months finalizing the choreography and handling that makes the missing link extremely easy to do. Over 100 live shows and cruise ships in front of 1,000 people in the audience were our testing ground. The missing link is not a pipe dream, but a tested, proven commercial method integrated into a commercial routine. The design of the missing link ring eliminates the problems of the past. The performer always has complete control over the rings. Guesswork has been eliminated. There's absolutely no fumbling or what we call the itsy-bitsy spider moves usually seen in linking finger ring routines. Each and every part of the missing link is smooth and direct, no fumbling, no wasted motion, just instantaneous success. The missing link is hilarious. There's never been a linking finger ring routine as funny or as entertaining as the missing link. The jokes are rock solid and audience tested. The interaction of the spectators on stage is for the first time visible to everyone. The missing link is commercial and the perfect routine for any age audience. Oh boy, do I ever have a disagreements with that. From corporate to family shows, the comedy is really funny but never offensive. Yep, I got big issues with that line of copy. Let me see here. The missing link ring is handmade jewelry crafted by an artisan we searched for and finally persuaded to take on our manufacturing. The metals are pure. No pop metals, brass, or any alloys are used. There are two options, the men's wedding ring or the ladies. The men's silver missing link ring is 100% pure silver wedding band with a man-made diamond. The ladies' version is perfection. The gate is incredible as it's both magnetic and mechanical. The shank is totally solid. It's the epitome of Himber rings. Both missing link rings are designed to look like high-end jewelry so you can work any crowd, even the filthy rich, without suspicion. The silver men's wedding band looks like three types of very popular rings, platinum, white, silver, and gold. Silver. Platinum, white, gold, and silver, excuse me. The ladies' ring simply looks perfect. We created it after I had a show where the audience was all ladies. The video training. Yeah, the missing link video training is delivered by instant download when you place your order. You'll have the training instantly, so you can start the learning process while you wait for your missing link ring to arrive. The video is delivered in HD 720p. The training is 1 hour and 26 minutes in length. There are three full performances shot live in cruise ships. The inner secrets of the missing link are covered in the incredible detail you've come to expect from Bob Kohler Magic. Okay, let's see, and the prices are currently $499.99 to $1,024.99, depending on the options you choose, whether you get one ring or two rings or whatever. And I believe that's a sale price. Let me go back and, well, I can't really go back and look at it now, but I believe that's a sale price. I do expect those prices to go up at the time of this recording. Okay, so let me talk first about the routine itself, the visual aspect of it. The linking, when he's linking one ring to two and then two to three, really is amazing. I mean, the first time I saw it, I was blown away. I mean, it's absolutely a fooler, really easy to do. And it's one of those things where when you see it, like, oh my God, I can't believe nobody thought of this earlier. Really, 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 really good. The proofs, the sections of the routine where you go to each audience. Well, let me back up a second. What you do is you go into the audience, you borrow three rings, and you invite those three people up on stage with you. So most of the action is on the stage. You put your back to those three people, and then you link the rings together, one, two, and three, like I described earlier. And it really does look fantastic. And he goes into the audience and has the first row of people look at it. There's a really good joke, a really funny joke about that. Goes back on stage, and then one by one has each person verifies their ring linked in the chain. When he gets to the third person, he gives them the rings to hold on to, and the rings unlink in their hands. And then and this is the cool part. They count one, two, three rings in his hand, no other rings. And then he's able to give the rings to three people, and they all go back and sit down. So it's very clean. What I like about it is that the people are on stage with you. And I like the linking sequence is incredible. The proofs are fine. What I don't like about it is that the unlinking happens inside a spectator's hand. I mean, it's probably really powerful for the spectator, but it's not so much for the audience to watch. You know what I mean? So that part of it I did not like. I like David Regal's handling of the unlinks a lot better. So there's that part of it to consider. From a technical standpoint, the linking, the initial links, when you get them all linked together and then you show the linking, one, two, and three, that's all pretty easy, like a one or a two on a scale of one to ten, with ten being the most difficult, with ten being the Farrell shuffle. I'll say it like that. The proofs, when you're engaging in some subterfuge, ringing in the gimmicked ring and ringing it out again and so forth, letting each person see their ring is linked on the chain of three, I found that to be a little bit more challenging, maybe like a four on a scale from one to ten, or maybe a five. And again, that's why this kind of rating system is so subjective, because it's not just, you know, what's easy to one person is not going to be easy to another person. I'll say it like that. But overall, I mean, it's a clean looking routine. Now, let me get into the routine itself. When the ad copy talks about a hilarious routine, perfect for family audiences, man, I really disagree with that. Like I said, I really feel unfortunate to be an honest reviewer and talk ill of the dead, but there's just times where Scott Alexander just couldn't help himself by putting in what I feel to be really derogatory scripting lines when he's going through the first part of the routine before any of the linking, and he's coaching the people what to say because he wants their reaction to carry it to the audience of 1,000 people in a cruise ship. So he's telling them exactly what to say. And each one of these lines isn't bad until he gets to the third one, and then he has them say something very derogatory about their own ring, which I didn't like at all. The other thing that that I don't like that he does, the supposed hilarious part of this, is that when he's got, you know, he borrows the three rings, gets all three of them up on stage, and he's going to each person one at a time, and he says something that was supposed to be funny about their rings. Two of these lines are derogatory comments about the ring, which I think is just rude. And one of the comments, and was it on all three shows? I can't remember, but on at least one of the performances, one of the lines he says about one of the guy's rings is borderline homophobic. And I had a real issue with that. I mean, a big issue with that. So as far as this being family friendly, nope. I totally disagree with that. And I just, you know, for as brilliant as Scott was, he just had some of those lines where he's just, you know what, you're just a dick. You know, and maybe that's expected in the cruise ship industry. I don't know. My wife and I have been on a lot of cruise ships. I've never performed on a cruise ship, but just some of those lines, I'm like, oh, you just couldn't help yourself, could you? So that just really irked me a lot. Now getting back to this whole discussion about what version of it is the best. Now, if you're doing cruise ships, his handling is absolutely the best. If you're in front of a big audience, because you've got to bring those people up on stage, their reactions have to sell the routine, the people in the back and that sort of thing. So, and then this is where it gets down to, you know, what kind of environment are you performing in? I mean, most of us listening to this aren't performing on cruise ships. If I'm doing an adult show, it is typically, and I don't do a ton of them anymore, but when I was doing a lot of corporate shows, most of mine were for like 75 to 100 people in a hotel ballroom. And you know, would this have worked in a hotel ballroom? Depending on the setup, maybe. And I say maybe because some of my setups where they gave me like a postage stamp to set up my stuff in. I mean, I had like, you know, like a 5x8 area to perform on. And if I had that much area to perform on, this routine wouldn't have worked. You need some separation between the volunteers so that you can do some of your subterfuge. I'm kind of hooked on that word now because I was watching David Parr routine, and he used it in his routine. It kind of stuck in my head now, lodged in there like a cool song. Again, depending on the size of your stage, a lot of this wouldn't work for you, because again, you do need that different of that distance. So would I recommend this? I would recommend this if you're in front of a large audience, you know, like more than 200-300 people at a time, when you know you're gonna have a good sized stage. Depending on your aspect of disposable income, it may be worth getting this just to learn that freaking 1-2-3 linking sequence, because that's freaking amazing. I mean, it really is, and it's easy too. On a rating scale, I'll give this a good solid 9. Because the handling is not too terrible. Like I said, I found some of it challenging, but you know, that's just me. So I'm not gonna mark down something for being a difficulty in terms of sleight of hand, because that's sometimes we need sleight of hand to accomplish something in magic. But I did take off a full point because I didn't like some of his jokes. I mean, you know, this being the most hilarious routine imaginable, I don't think so. I mean, I think Nick Lewins is a lot funnier, which I'll talk about his next. I give this a 9 out of 10, but I can't give it a wholehearted resume. Like I said, if you're getting this for the handling and you're in front of a big audience and you know you're going to have a big stage, then yeah, you can get this. And it's probably, from a handling standpoint, it probably is the best, even though I was not enamored with the unlinking sequence. If you're like me and you're doing a lot of corporate shows and like I used to, and you're in front of like 75, 80 people and then they're fairly close to you and everything, no, I think there's better options for you. And this is where I'm going to get into more of the discussion of why the best version of a trick is subjective of the kind of shows you're doing. There is something very, I mean, Bob and Scott looked at the traditional handlings of the linking finger rings as being very inferior because you're going into the audience, you're doing the proofs in the audience and that sort of thing. And if you're in a cruise ship, I get that, because if you've got 1,000 people and you leave the stage and you're winding around in the audience, you got 1,000 people, unless they've got video support, you got 1,000 people who can't see what you're doing. So I get that. But going back to my career as a stage hypnotist, I from the very beginning, I wanted to structure my show like a roller coaster where there's, you know, a build and a climb and things get crazy and that kind of stuff. So the first couple of routines in my, I'm getting back to linking fingerings, trust me. My first couple of routines were, you know, basic routines where everybody hypnotized were all doing the same thing. And then I had some routines where each people were doing individual things. So some individuality came out. So that was like a second ramp up of the program. And then I got to the point where people were crossing into the audience. And again, I've got a home study version of a stage hypnosis course coming. I just have to finish putting it together. But my third or fourth routine of the show, people, the hypnotized people are going into the audience, and there's something very palpable when you're crossing that proscenium arch, when you're breaking that fourth wall, people would just react and the reactions would like ramp up. So we have this nice staircase of reactions climbing throughout the show, which is really, really cool. So I think I consider Sean Begonia's extreme hanky, you know, the one where you drop it in the bottle and hanky dances in the bottle and go into the audience. I mean, that is absolutely a trick, was just is screaming and going to the audience. There's something very powerful about bringing the magic into the audience. So again, when we're considering this whole concept of the best, it really have to think about your audiences, and you have to think about your staging situations, the amount of people you're going to be in front of and things like that. So don't get roped into the best version just because somebody says that it is. Look at a lot of different versions and consider what is the best one for you. Like for years, I just did the Hyundai 500 as part of my strolling set, and it was not until I wanted to shift and use it as a part of as a stand-up piece that I decided to change methods. I still think, in terms of economy, all you need is a certain item from Walmart and your bills, and you're good to go. For economy, I still think Hyundai 500 is the best for strolling. That's an old, really old handling. So those are my thoughts about the missing link and how why it doesn't necessarily pay to just blindly follow somebody else's recommendation that is the best. You really have to. It goes back to something that Jim Caulfield told me when I was lamenting all of the thousands of dollars of tricks that I've wasted money on over the years. And Jim's like, you got to do that exploration so you can find what works for you. And he's absolutely right. So let's go on. And by the way, I'm going to have all the links to these three linking fingering options in the show notes. So now let me go to Nick Lewin's ultimate linking fingering routine. Let's see. So on Nick's website now, ideal for cabaret, corporate, or theater performances. Let's see. Nick talking about what Di Vernon said to him. One of my proudest moments was when Di Vernon told me that if he wanted to perform a magic act professionally, the first thing he would do is come to me and offer me whatever I wanted to part with this routine. I've now decided to release my handling to a very limited number of performers. If you want to perform an act professionally, what if that means that Di Vernon wasn't a pro? If he was just, a really cool, brilliant part-timer. I never knew that. Okay. There are very few routines in magic that have a strong enough impact to create a reputation for the person who performs them. This is one such routine. Billy McCollum made the statement after about the effect. Nick's routine is far and away the best in the business and one of the reasons he makes the big bucks. This routine is not for amateurs. It's for the professional performer who will take the time and learn to present in the correct manner. While not a complex routine from a sleight of hand standpoint, it has a structure and a dialogue that needs to be studied very carefully. Boy, is that true. This package teaches you how to perform it with devastating effect almost anywhere at any time. Features, what you get, a beautifully illustrated hardback book, a new bonus 2-hour, 20-minute masterclass seminar on the routine, a DVD tutorial, a complete live performance footage, a CD of musical cues, live TV performance rights certificate, a 30-minute Skype teaching session, and the last two items are available only to the original purchaser. So in other words, if you buy this thing and you sell it on eBay, for example, you can't send along the teaching session and their TV rights expire. Strong commercial magic can be formed anytime for any audience. And there's a wonderful testimonials here from Jeff McBride, Gayton Bloom, Paul Romhaney, Richard Webster, Kozak, David Regal, Matt King, Billy McComb, Phil Ackerley, Janiel Brown. So that's, I'm not going to read all these testimonials, but that's it. Pretty sparse copy. It's available for $335. Now, the one thing I need to stress with this particular purchase is that you don't actually get a hammering ring with it. And Nick explains why, because in his handling, the hammering ring is the least important part of the routine. There's a lot of psychology that goes into this. So you can use almost any Himber ring. So if you've got, you know, David Regal's, or you've got Bob Kohler's, or you picked up another one somewhere else, you know, like the Porper, the ghostly rings. I can't remember what they're called. You know, so it basically, for Nick's, the ring doesn't matter. He likes a signet ring, a big knobby signet ring, for reasons that he makes clear in his teachings. This is really good. Unlike Scott Alexander's, I like a lot of the jokes in Nick's routine. I don't want to reveal too much about the routine, but it's like so Nick. But I've used some of these jokes when I was doing the linking finger ring on a semi ongoing basis, and it really does play well. A lot of the jokes are, I feel the jokes are less controversial, and they could really play better for a family audience. Even though Nick, to my understanding, Nick performs almost exclusively for adults. Handling. Very easy handling from a physical standpoint, like a one or a two. But there's a lot of psychology that goes into this, because, and I'll reveal one thing about the routine. Nick never tries to keep the Himber ring a secret. It's in open play the entire time, which allows him to link more than three rings together and allows him to have some really clear displays, both linking and unlinking. And he gets a lot of, I mean, I think his routine is like 10 or 12 minutes. I haven't watched it in a while, but he gets a lot of mileage out of this. And he does go into the audience quite a bit. But a lot of the linking and unlinking, it all happens, you know, on the stage. So you're seeing what happens. And Nick did a lot of, I don't know if Nick does the same handling when he's on a cruise ship or not, but the routine that I saw him do this in, it was in a, it was like in a lounge or something. There was like maybe, I don't know, maybe like 100 people watching or something like that. And it played really well, even though he was on the stage and off the stage. And he used that for like a really cute gag at the end when he's, you know, people were applauding when he's still in the audience. And then, you know, he has a couple funny lines, and then, you know, the final applause is him on stage and everything. And I really like this a lot. I wound up not using his routine because the psychology of it was, look, I'm nervous enough about borrowing two rings. Borrowing three or four rings just made me way too nervous. And there were just aspects about the physical part of the routine that I was just, I'll admit it, I was nervous about. You know, we all have those predilections, and it just led me down a different path. But what I wound up using was a lot of Nick's jokes, because those really played well for me. I really like those a lot. So, again, you're getting a lot of good teaching, but you're not getting an actual ring. But again, the way Nick's routine is structured, it doesn't matter. You don't need to have a special ring. You just need a good solid Himber ring available anywhere. So that's something that is indeed something to consider. Yeah, boy, I really wish I knew whether or not he was doing this handling on cruise ships in front of 1,000 people. My thinking is he probably was, because, I mean, he built his reputation off this. This is like one of his showpieces, and he did it, and he did a lot of cruise ships. So my guess is he probably did. And he was successful. He was booked over and over again. So even though he's going into the audience and out of the audience and back on stage and everything, it played really well for him. So, and this goes to say, you got all these pros, you know, Matt King and Paul Romanian and others talking about how his Nick's handling is like the best. So it just goes to show you that there is no best. I mean, I think there are best, but that's from my perspective. So, you know, best is what works best for you. I'll say that again. So I will give Nick's routine, let's see, I want to get, well, yeah, you know what, I will give it a 10 out of 10, because I really like a lot of the jokes. I really like a lot of the jokes. I like a lot of the really cool psychology he has, even though I don't particularly choose to use his routine. It wasn't so much fear of the handling, because it's been a while since I've explored this, probably about a good 7-8 years since I explored Nick's routine. And I'm thinking about back on it now, and I think one of the reasons why I didn't use his routine is because I didn't want to deal with four volunteers. I mean, yes, I didn't want to have four expensive rings in my possession, but I wanted the routine to play quicker. So I wanted to just stick with just two borrowed rings, or I'm sorry, three borrowed rings instead of four, or maybe it was five. No, I'm trying to remember how Nick's routine goes. You borrow either four or five rings. I think four. And it was just too much. So I wanted a more streamlined handling. I wanted that final linking of the three rings, you know, that chain of three, you know, as the finale, the first part of the routine before you got into the unlinks. And with Nick's, you still only use one Himber ring, but some of the handling gets a little bit fuzzy from the audience's standpoint, I feel, in my personal opinion. But I'm never going to dissuade anybody from saying this is one of the best routines because there's so much great psychology in here, so much great humor. It's a great routine, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to give it a 10, even though it doesn't actually come in the ring. But again, I think that's the least concerning part of this particular routine. And another example of, you know, why finding the best is very difficult, because I'd be willing to bet that Bob and Scott would look at Nick's routine, especially if it was done on a cruise ship, and go, oh my God, he's doing so much of it in the audience. And they see that as a fatal flaw. A lot of Nick's humor is based on going into the audience and interacting with some of the audience members during this routine. He gets some of the best laughs of the routine with this. And I don't want to reveal what it is, but for this routine, there's a part of it where he essentially plays a different character. And it's just, I mean, it's so Nick, and I just love it. It's really, really cool. So yeah, I'm going to give this a 10 out of 10. And then we get to the handling that I've settled on. You know, my personal favorite handling, and that is David Regal's Linking Fingering project. So let me go to his ad copy, and it says, David Regal's Linking Fingering project is back and it's better. Let me see here. Now we have a limited supply of deluxe sets. These come with, in addition to the gold-plated set, a gimmick silver ring for those who wish to have that extra option. The silver ring is one of my own design that is gimmicked with magnetic components. Option two, the gold-plated set with additional silver-plated gaffed ring and Koran gimmicks. Option three, the silver-plated gaff ring and Koran gimmicks only, no instructions. And then let me go into the prices. Okay, so the option one is domestic, $195, $750 shipping. Option two, with the additional ring, is a domestic, $245 plus $750 shipping. And option three, where all you get is the ring and the Koran gimmicks, is $69 with free shipping. So this is a great option. This option three is a great option if you decide you like Nick Lewin's handling, but you want to have a rock solid killer gaffed ring. And this is the kind of ring that Nick prefers for his particular routine. So now let me get into further into the copy. Let me see. The Linking Finger Rings is simply one of the great effects of magic, invented by Percy Diaconis. Oh boy, I don't know how to pronounce that name. There's probably people in the cafe screaming at me by now. Invented around 1960 and marketed by Richard Himber, it's the rare sort of effect that captures an audience's imagination. Three rings are borrowed. The magician proceeds to link them together into a chain of three. He then unlinks them and returns them to their owners. What makes this a miracle is the fact that the audience members can each attest to the fact that their ring is linked to the other two. Over the years, I've been impressed with some of the machining I've seen put into the other marketed versions of the gimmick, but I also look at it and think, this is clever, but it wasn't designed for actually performing the linking finger rings. My preferred gimmick is included in this set. It was designed for the performance of this classic effect. What you want in your gimmick is no extraneous movement, instant knowledge of orientation, silence, one-handed operation. The unique gimmick does all of the above. It is in a routine of magic often tarnished by excess fiddling, undesired moves have been eliminated. What is new about this release? First, quality. My previous manufacturer's output had too much variance. As a result, I discarded a large percentage of every run. Last year, I commissioned samples from an assortment of different suppliers, and I went with the best. Second, key improvements. The rings are not only gold-plated, they are put through an enameling process that darkens the engraved area so that in any performing situation, one can instantly tell how to orient the gimmick. My original design involving magnetic closure has been entirely re-engineered and made more durable. The work area provided by the gimmick has been enhanced and expanded, allowing for even greater ease of handling. Three, the price. My gold-plated sets have sold for $300 for many years. Thanks to the reduction of waste, I'm reducing the price of the new run for the time being to $195. The set includes my new design Himber ring, gimmick, a matching ungimmicked ring, a matching locking ring, classic method, gimmicks with which to perform the astounding Koran climax in which two rings hang from a pencil linked and one visibly unlinks falling into the open palm. At that point, the rings are returned to their owners with no switching, a pencil and video instruction. I only use one gimmick for my routine. The other gimmicks are included to make the set complete so the purchaser can perform any version of the linking finger rings that he or she desires. Okay, yeah, a lot of great stuff in here. As far as the routines, David has a pretty cool routine, a premise that he sets up at the beginning of the routine before he actually gets into the handling. It's nice. It's not necessarily, it doesn't fit me. He references his daughter. He references a couple of other things. He goes a little PG-13 with one of his references, which is kind of funny, but it didn't fit me at all. So I wound up, you know, buying this and then going with a lot of Nick's jokes for my routine. And that's probably what I'll do in the future, as I sold my gimmicks during the pandemic, thinking my performing career is over. And I recently just rebought David's gimmicks so that I can do the routine. But I'll probably gravitate more toward Nick Lewin's method. I'll give you like a free tip too. When I was doing it for some corporate motivational audiences, my presentation was around the idea of teamwork and all of us working together. And if you imagine the idea of the linking finger rings, you know, the presentational hook and the tie into the effect becomes readily apparent. So, you know, take that with my blessing. Okay, so in terms of sleight of hand, this is I'm trying to remember Nick's. Nick's wasn't bad. In terms of difficulty, I would say this is, from my standpoint, this is by far the easiest of the three that I've discussed so far. A one or a two in terms of sleight of hand, I mean, very easy. And as he talks about in his ad copy, as does Bob and Steve, Scott Alexander and Bob Kohler, they talked about it too. They wanted to eliminate a lot of the excess fiddling. And they were able to do that. And so does David. He eliminates a lot of the fiddling, very clean handling. What I like about his handling is that, again, you're able to go into the audience and get the proofs, you know, have each person look at the rings to verify it is theirs that are linked or whatever. Now, the linking is like, okay, like he puts the rings in his hand, squeezes his hand, reaches down to the pencil and shows all three rings linked. It's absolutely effective. I like Scott Alexander's linking better, but there's nothing wrong with David's. Now, where David's really shines, other than the linking and unlinking being easy, the physical, you know, sleight of hand of it being easy, is that unlinking. Because he gets down, he unlinks the first ring, and I'm not going to reveal how he does it. And then he unlinks the remaining two rings. He scoops up the ring so that the two rings are hanging from one ring on his pencil. And then he blows on it, and the ring hanging from the ring hanging down from the pencil falls away, leaving just one ring in the pencil, and it's very visual. Oh my God, is that great? And the gimmick is so stinking low tech. It's wonderful, and it's I've done that, and I've gotten gasps. So I've decided that David Regal's is my preferred, because I do like going into the audience, because a lot of my audiences are smaller, like I said, like 75, 80 people. And going into the audience for me is the best, because I'm crossing that proscenium arch. You know, I can go over and I can directly involve people. I can have, you know, if I want to take 30 seconds, I can have every table see all three rings linked and that sort of thing. So that's nice too. And just that unlinking, where the one just melts through the other and falls into your hand, that's really powerful. And the ad copy is accurate, you know, 10 out of 10 in terms of accuracy for the ad copy. As soon as those last two rings are unlinked, you can easily hand, without any switching, without anything else in your hands, hand each ring back to the owners. And that's really powerful too. This to me is a complete 10 out of 10. One out of 10 in terms of difficulty. The gimmicks are well made. 10 out of 10 in terms of impact. They all three of these they all have their flaws, and they all have their good points. You know, Scott's is probably the one you want to use if you're on a cruise ship. Nick's, you could actually, all three of these you could use on a cruise ship, but the best is probably Scott's on a cruise ship, so you can get, you know, the reactions out of people and everything. If you're in front of a smaller audience, I'd say either Nick's or David's are probably the best, and that's what makes things like this in magic, what makes everything so fascinating, because it is so subjective. There is no best. I mean, looking at these three items today, because I really became obsessed with the linking finger rings as a plot a number of years ago. And I really searched high and low for the best handling. And my conclusion is that there is no best. It's all dependent on where you're performing. So consider that where you're performing, you know, what is going to be the best for you. It may involve a little bit of extra work, a little bit of extra expense. You know, when you buy something, you go, okay, that doesn't really fit me, unfortunately. That's just, you know, that's just the profession that we're in, for those of us who are working professionally. That's just how it is in magic. So I will have all three of these in the show notes. I do recommend all of these with certain reservations, like I've talked about, for all three. I think David Regal's is probably the best. I think Nick's presentation some of the psychology is the best. And I think from a routine standpoint, a scripting standpoint, Scott Alexander's is the weakest, but from a big audience standpoint, his is clearly the best. So they all have their own, good points. They all have their own flaws. And you can consider this just one guy's opinion that I do like all three, and the choice of which one to use is up to you. So that's it for this week's episode of the Professional Magician Podcast. As always, I invite you to visit me at www.theprofessionalmagicianclubpro.com, or you can type in www.theprofessionalmagicianclub.com. I did buy both domains. So check it out, and you can see all kind. You can see my entire product line, where I share a lot of my routines, my marketing, my services that I offer, and a slew of free goodies out there to help you build your business. So check it out. Get my free stuff, learn to book more shows at higher fees, and I'll see you all next week at the Professional Magician Podcast. Thanks so much. Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening to today's show. If you haven't already, subscribe today so you don't miss a single episode. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of The Professional Magician Podcast.